care for your pretenses or your wishes. I am the Raja. I am your intended. You will obey. Something fires through me, hot and fierce. My powers are back. But before I can use them, he tosses me through the doorway to my chamber. I find my balance and do not fall.
Be grateful I fear the wrath of the gods, he says, or I would call off the tournament and wed you tonight.
I clutch the front of my sari. No threat has terrified me more.
Do not let her leave,
Tarak commands his guards.
Watch the door and balcony. Kill anyone who tries to get in. She stays here until I return.
I slam the door shut and press my hands over my eyes. Devon. I picture him bruised and bloody in shackles. He has given up, but I will not. I cannot let Tarak execute him.
How is supper?
I drop my hands and see Brock step out from behind the balcony drapery. Brock, I breathe. I thought you were imprisoned. He smiles.
I'm hard to catch.
A conda hangs against his back, and an axe is slung on each hip. He looks intimidating, like the first time we met.
I've been waiting for you since you left for supper.
I glance at the door, expecting guards to burst through at any moment, and speak in a low voice. What happened? How did Devon get caught?
We visited Jaya, and then Devon suggested we all go to Yasmin's tomb. He thought since the Raj is trying to bring Yasmin back, he would hide the book somewhere close to her. He said that's what he would do if he were Tarak.
My chest pangs at Devon's thoughtful observation. I should have considered it myself. The day I wandered the gardens, Yasmin's tomb had been recently opened.
I waited outside the tomb, and he and Jaya went in,
Brock continues.
Mamas followed us and brought more soldiers. I warned Devon they were coming, but he and Jaya fell behind.
My hands itch to throttle Manas. Does Hastin know? Is anyone else coming? Brock jams each word out from between tight teeth.
Hastin doesn't feel Devon is worth the risk.
And Anjali?
Sides with her father. All the rebels do.
I ball my hands into fists. Devon may not be part of our agreement, but I will not abandon him. Hastin can forget our bargain, forget the Jala, forget the tournament. The Buddha warlord can kill the Raja himself. I'm getting Devon and Jaya, I say. We're leaving tonight. I grab Yasmin's daggers from my bedside drawer. My hands heat up, fire boiling through my veins. I exhale a calming breath and will the rising heat to recede. I need every last cinder of my powers to break Devon free.
I'm coming with you,
Brock says. I pause to look at him. But you are with the rebels.
I'm with my brother,
he corrects, his gaze resolute. I resist hugging him for staying and shove one dagger into the waist of my trousers. I add my slingshot and tie the pouch of firing stones to my side. Tarak has the entries guarded, I say.
Did you practice today?
No, but I will manage. The truth is, I will explode if I do not expel the heat smoldering through me. I draw the second dagger, leaving my other hand free, and approach the door. Brock draws his axe.
Ready?
I nod, and he throws open the door. Manas and three more guards draw their swords. Brock flies at the trio. I capture Manas's arm. Pull. Don't push. I feel for his inner heat and tug. A golden thread passes from Manas to me as I coax his fire out strand by strand, flame by flame. My inner fire grows hotter, stronger with his added light, until Manas drops to the floor. Brock parches two guards and cuffs the final one in the head with the blunt end of his axe. I look down at Manas's gray complexion, my burning veins full of his excess soul fire.
Will he be all right? Should be. Next time, let go a little sooner, or you will turn your opponent into a prune.
Brock pushes one of the guard's legs out of the way with his foot.
Where to now?
Jaya first. Brock's sneakiness proves dependable. He leads the way through the vacant corridors, down 3 levels to a slightly ajar door. We back up against the wall. A servant comes out, and Brock nabs him by the neck. The servant sags in his arms. We drag him out of the way and steal inside the hushed chamber. I round a corner, dagger first. Jaya waits there, ready to attack with the supper knife. Her cheek is bandaged, the whites of her wide eyes matching the color of the sterile cloth. Kali, she lowers her weapon with an exhalation. Brock glances in the other doorways with his axe raised.
Where's the general?
He's not here. Why have you come?
We're getting you and Devin out, I say.
Jaya's shoulders slacken. I wanted to tell you what happened at supper. The captain was right, the Jale was in the tomb. We had it when the guards arrived, but my skirt caught in the door. Captain Nike stayed to help me. The guards seized us and put him in the dungeons.
Where's the Jala now? I ask.
Gautam returned it to the Raja. He must have hidden it again by now. A groan rises up in my throat. Devin had the Jala in his hands. I cannot think about how close we were to leaving here together, to having our dream. Kali, Gautam dropped me off here after supper and then went straight to the dungeons. An apology seeps from Jaya's gaze. He's questioning Captain Naik about the Buddha warlord.
But Devin doesn't know anything!
Doesn't matter.
Brock grabs his hair.
Gautam will torture him regardless.
Brock does not say so, but I know that he thinks we should have gone to find Devin first. Coming here for Jaya was my order, my choice. And now we may be too late. 29. Jaya and I descend the dark, slippery stairs to the dungeons after Brock. I grip the wall, tension vibrating out of my fingertips. Brock stops near the bottom and motions for us to stay. He disappears around the corner, and I hear a loud thump. I peer around the bend and see a guard go down, parched. Jaya comes forward with me, eyeing the unconscious guard. Brock lays his hands on the door above the latch.
Viraji? A little help, please?
He must mean that he wants me to burn it down. That is one way to expel the excess heat we have taken in. I join him at his side and rest my hands on the wood. Call me Kali.
Scorch it, Kali.
I do as he asks, eager to push out my simmering powers. But nothing happens. Brock curses under his breath.
They put the same poisonous herbs from your tonic into the clay bricks to keep Buddha prisoners from escaping the dungeons. The bricks must be around this doorframe, too.
He hacks at the door with his axe.
Jaya pales.
He knows about the toxins in your tonic?
Do you?
I search her guilt-ridden face. I helped Healer Baka grow them. I was worried at first, but she explained that the combination wouldn't hurt you, and it didn't. The tonic lowered your fevers.
The tonic did more than that.
Brock cracks a hole in the door big enough to shove his arm in. He reaches through the gap and opens the latch. The door swings open and Brock steps inside. Jaya goes next. I follow her into the dim, tunnel-like corridor. Immediately I am doused with the sensation of being immersed in frigid water. The toxins in the walls dwindle my powers to a tiny, useless ember. Just like when I entered the atrium.
Brock opens and closes his fists, frowning. Is this how it feels to be a full mortal? How do they stand it?
Shh, Jaya says. I hear something. Garbled voices float out of a cell at the far end of the corridor. Jaya nudges me forward with a look, and I lead the way. We creep past iron-barred cells that reek of human waste and vomit. I slide my slingshot from my hip and dig around in the pouch for a firing stone. The final cell door hangs open, and Gautam's voice carries out.
I have given you plenty of chances. Tell me where Hostin is hiding!
I edge up to the doorway. Candlelight shines out, yellowing the dingy floor. I don't know, says Devin, his voice weak.
A string of muted thumps ensues, followed by a pained groan. I do not need my powers to feel my temper rise. I arm my slingshot and pull it taut. Brock ticks his head sideways for me to hold off. We do not know who else is inside. But that is a chance I will take. Gotham's voice toughens.
Tell me what you know.
There is a hard thud, and then Devon groans. I have heard enough. I step into the lit doorway. Devon is tied to a chair, his face a bloody mess. Gotham and his two guards reach for their weapons. I lob the firing stone at one guard, hitting him in the eye. He goes down. Brock throws his axe into the other guard's chest. His brutality strikes me like I am the one hit. I am glad he is on our side. Brock raises the second axe at Gotham.
Lay down your weapon.
The general spits a foul curse and drops his sword. Brock shoves Gotham against the wall, raising the axe to his throat, and then disarms the first guard by kicking his sword out of reach. The guard stays down, cupping his injured eye. I rush to Devon. His face is worse up close. Blood runs down his nose and spatters the sandy floor around his chair. As I untie his wrists, I try not to think of the pain he must be in.
I had it, Kali.
His voice is pure agony.
I had the book.
It doesn't matter anymore. I release his wrists from the constricting cordage, and his arms slacken at his sides. I prop him up, bracing him under his shoulder.
We're leaving. None of you will make it out of the palace alive,
says Gotham. Jaya takes a charged step into the cell. Yes, we will.
Gotham clenches his hands into fists. You are my wife. I order you to stay.
I am devoted to the gods, Jaya says. I do not obey you. Gotham lunges for the axe, sunken into the fallen guard's chest, and yanks it free. The conscious soldier throws a handful of sand in Brock's face, temporarily blinding him, and retrieves his sword. He aims the pointed end at Brock. I rise with my dagger, and Devon draws its twin from my hip. Gotham snags Jaya by the hair and raises the axe blade to her throat.
Surrender or she dies.
Devon takes aim with the dagger, but he has no clear shot, with Gotham using Jaya to shield himself.
Have you no loyalty? Devon says. She's your wife! And you're my son. You think that means anything? Mathura chose to keep you. I never wanted a useless bastard.
Brock smears sand from his streaming eyes.
Couldn't handle more than one in the family? Save your insults, demon.
Gotham tightens his hold on the blade at Jaya's throat. In her hand, gripped at her side beneath the pleats of her sari, is the supper knife.
Drop your weapons,
the general says.
First let Jaya go,
I say.
Young Viraji,
Gotham sneers at my title.
Still haven't learned your place.
Neither have I. Jaya twists and I see a flit of silver. She buries the short blade of the table knife in her husband's throat. Gotham stumbles back, eyes oversized with shock. He drops to his knees, feeling for the handle of the knife lodged deep. This will not be a quick death, choking on his own blood. But it is the death he deserves. The soldier I shot in the eye slashes at Brock. While the guard's back is turned, Devon tosses the dagger with swift precision. The blade drives into the soldier's spine, and he arches. Brock steps out of the way, and the guard plummets face first to the ground. Brock sheathes his axes.
I had him, he says.
Of course you did,
Devon says, cradling his side.
Didn't expect to see you here.
You either. My elder brother, the most loyal of soldiers in the dungeons. Times do change.
Brock retrieves my twin dagger and comes to Devon's side.
Can you walk?
I will make do.
Devon picks up one of the discarded swords, taking care not to strain his injured ribcage, and turns to his brother.
For what it's worth,
he says,
I always knew you were a burner. I wasn't pretending you weren't because I was ashamed of you. I thought I was protecting you by keeping it a secret.
Rock rests his hand on his brother's upper back.
I was protecting you by keeping my powers to myself.
Devin grabs Brock's shoulder.
I'm glad you aren't dead.
Brock's face bursts into a grin.
Same to you.
I leave them and go to Jaya. She stands over Gautam, staring vacantly at his lifeless eyes. I wrap her trembling body in a hug. It's done.
I had to do it.
I know. She presses her face into my shoulder, and I smooth back her hair. You did the right thing.
Brock checks the corridor. Clear.
I lead Jaya out of the cell. She does not glance back at her dead husband, but pushes onward through the shadowy dungeons. Brock leads the way down the corridor to the entry.
Son of a scorpion,
he says.
The guard is gone.
I look up the vacant stairwell. It will not be empty for long. The alarm has been sounded. Tarek knows that we are here.
The chapel has the closest hidden passageway, Devin says. We will follow the underground river out of Vani.
We climb the stairs, my jittery body pumping with adrenaline. Devin leans heavily to the right, but he keeps up with us. All is quiet when we reach the stairwell landing. I peek around the corner, and Devin pulls me back. Half a breath later, an arrow pierces the wall behind my head. Brock steps into the line of fire and flings his axes. He takes down the two archers, but the guards behind them charge forward. Brock gives Devin a maniacal grin.
Like old times,
he says.
You're as impulsive as ever, Devin replies,
raising his sword while holding his sore side with his free arm. He joins Brock, and the stampede of guards rushes upon us. The brothers engage our attackers, dancing around each other's blades. Devin falls behind the rhythm, and a guard plunges past him. The soldier lunges his sword at me. I twist around him, and he redirects, aiming for Jaya. I leap onto his back and clutch his face in my hands. Finding his well of light, I pull. The immediate surge of heat is invigorating. I hang on as he collapses in a heap. I look up from the floor and see Jaya gawking at me. I'm a burner, I explain. She offers me a hand up. That explains a lot. Are you afraid? Of you? Never. I squeeze her hand. She squeezes back, but lets me go quickly. I do not take offense. I am adjusting to my new self, too. Brock darts around the corner and nearly trips on the unconscious guard.
You remember to let go,
he says to me. I aim to be your best trainee. He smiles.
Shouldn't be hard, you're my only one.
I look past him to Devin. His sword arm hangs so low that he is dragging the tip of the blade across the floor. He is worse off than before and rapidly losing endurance. I loop my arm around his waist, and we hasten to the chapel. Corridor after corridor is empty. My tired breaths boom through my head louder than our footsteps. The farther we go without more guards accosting us, the higher my anxiety soars. The palace is too calm, but we are so close. We have only to reach the passageway, and then we can flee to safety. I feel Devin's strength of will in his every fatigued step. We are almost there. Devin and I push through the chapel door and immediately halt. Tarek blocks the underground passageway. Before we can turn back, guards file in behind us, Manas near the front. Tarek must have known that we would come here. It is the passageway closest to the dungeons. My powers flare, dispatching a pulse of heat. Devin weathers the heat wave beside me.
Kali, don't, he says.
Tarek paces nearer, stopping out of reach.
Don't what, Captain? Break into my dungeons and attempt to rescue you? This is oddly reminiscent of the night I caught my first wife running away. She, too, abandoned me for a man who stood behind her strength instead of his own.
Devin tips up his chin.
Sometimes it takes more strength to step back than forward.
Does it?
Tarek steps sideways. I tamp down my inner fire. My abilities are the only surprise I have left.
This is what's going to happen, Captain,
Tarek says.
Your cohorts will relinquish their weapons, and the Viragy will come with me. My guards will escort you and this filthy Buta traitor to the dungeons, and at dawn you will both be stoned.
I have a better idea.
Brock swivels and slices into the guards with his axes. His impulsivity claims two victims.
Jaya spins around and swipes a sword from a fallen guard, and together they confront the rest.
Tarek draws a Haladi and swings at Devon. He blocks with his sword, wincing from the movement. Tarek jabs at him rapidly. Devon lags behind, parrying just fast enough to keep up. He is in no condition to battle any longer, and he will slip up. I grip the dagger. As soon as Devon steps out of range, I throw. The tip of the blade strikes the Raja in the leg. A poor hit. I aimed higher for the Raja's heart. Tarek stumbles back, face paling. He wrenches the bloody blade from his thigh and gapes at the turquoise handle.
Yasmin, he says.
Devon and I bolt for the tapestry, Devon yelling for his brother. Brock throws his hands out, and a wall of heat slaps the guards, sending them cringing back. Jaya rushes for the hidden door after us, passing Tarek. The Raja raises his Haladi and hurls it. The blade spins across the chapel after Jaya. Just when I think that she has escaped it, one side impales her back, and she crumples to the floor.
No! I yell, running back for her. Brock backs up toward us and throws another blast of heat, pinning Tarek to the wall.
I fall to my knees beside my friend.
Gods, the blade! I yank it out of her, and she screams. I toss the Haladi aside and lay Jaya on her back. Her hand seeks mine. I hold it close to my chest.
You will be all right. We're almost out of here.
Her hand faintly squeezes mine. I love you, it means. The movement, albeit small, encourages me. I can carry her out. I can find a healer or take her to the aquifer. I can...
Kali? Jaya's eyelashes flicker and then her eyes go blank.
Jaya? I clutch her hand. She does not respond with her usual echo squeeze. She always answers. Always?
No, no, no.
I listen for her pulse but hear only my own heart knocking against my ribs. Her warm blood spreads out beneath her like crimson wings soaking through my skirt. Still, I listen, seeking for some sign that she is with me. She cannot be gone. She would not leave me. Brock tugs on me to go, but I cling to Jaya. He turns his back to me and throws another strong blast at the guards, holding Tarek at bay with the same storm of heat. My mind tells me to run, to let Jaya go. I search her for signs of movement, each second an eternity packed with frantic prayers and urgent pleas. What I find strips away all layers of my hope. No breath, no heartbeat, no life. She is gone. Brock grabs me and I let go of Jaya's limp hand. He drags me after Devon through the doorway and into the passageway. I yank myself from his hold and look back at the tapestry. Sobs wrench from my chest. I fall to my knees with an enraged cry and throw my hands out. A heat wave flies off my glowing fingers and a hot wind ravages the tapestry, igniting it in a blinding blast of flames. I cringe away to protect my face, and when I look back again, the blazing doorway is gone. Black char stains the bricks, and the air hints of singed hair and burning dust. The fire starts to die, and with it, my inner flame shrinks to a faint flicker. Raja Tarek will think that Brock let loose the heat wave. But I want Tarek to know that I did it. I want him to fear me. Devon lifts me to my feet, but I pull away from him, my tear-filled eyes burning from the clearing smoke. On the other side of the doorway, the Raja shouts for his guards to follow us. Fury fires through my veins. Tarek must pay.
Kali, says Devon. We have to go.
His face comes into focus, the bloodied mess that was once his beautiful jaw and lips. I cannot risk his life again. Someday, I will go for Tarek's throat. Someday I will make him hurt. Someday, but not today. I run with Brock and Devon down the passageway. My grief stretches to new heights as we travel away from the hidden door, away from the chapel, away from Jaya. Without a torch, the dark is darker and the water is louder, rushing through my ears like a midnight rainstorm. Devon latches onto me for balance, and I stick to his side, relying on his fortitude as much as he does mine. He is propped heavier against me the farther and faster we walk. Somewhere in the blackness behind us, footsteps pound. Little spots approach, torches. We dash out of the tunnel into a dim cavern. Brock runs down an incline toward the blue-black river gushing below. Devon and I try to match his pace, but we lose our footing. We trip over each other and tumble to the bottom of the slope, shy of the riverbank. Brock stands knee-deep in the rushing water.
Run!
Soldiers spill out of the passage above us. The archers line up and arm their bows. I hold Devon up and we stagger for the river. It will take us downstream, a faster escape than on foot. A few steps later, Devon jerks against me and collapses. I stumble under his weight and take some of the impact of his fall. My hand comes away slick with blood. Good gods, I breathe. An arrow is lodged in Devon's shoulder, the serrated tip burrowed deep in his flesh. His brow scrunches in pain.
Cully, I'm done.
No! My quaking fingers grasp his chest. You have to get up. He rolls onto his side, blood flowing down his back.
Leave me.
His order triggers a flash of panic. No, I cannot do this without you!
You can do anything you set your heart on.
He pushes me. More guards rush out of the tunnel armed with bows and arrows. Tarek runs behind them yelling, "Stop them!" The archers release a swarm of arrows, spearing the muddy ground and nearly clipping my foot. I grab Devon's ankles and drag him, still on his side, down to the mucky riverbank. He groans and tells me to stop. I ignore him and the trail of fresh blood he leaves behind. Brock sloshes back to help. He grips Devon under the arms, and I pull his legs. Cool water laps over him, but it is not deep enough. Soldiers' steps thunder behind us. I press my lips to Devon's and send up a quick prayer of protection. Let the sky lead you, the land ground you, the fire cleanse you, and the water feed you. He murmurs something, but I cannot make it out. I will follow you, I say, and with one final push, I shove Devon into the river. Brock catches him, holding both their heads above the surface, and drags him into the current. The fast-moving water picks them up and sweeps them along. I slog into the frigid water after them. More arrows fly in front of me, blocking my path. Devon and Brock float out of sight. I run with the current, hurrying after them near the shore.
Seize her!
Water rises to my waist, and the river sucks me downstream. I move my arms back and forth near the surface to keep my head above water. Splashes sound behind me, and Manas grabs me. I try to kick him off, but he is a stronger swimmer and will not let go. I bob under and up again. Manas hauls me, my arms and legs flailing, back to shore. I sputter up mouthfuls of river water, my limbs wet and heavy. Manas and another guard lug me before Tarek and shove me to my knees. I hang my head as I regain my breath, but I can see that the Raja is pressing a hand to his bleeding thigh where I stabbed him. His injury is at my eye level.
The captain may have gotten away, he says, but he will not live through the night.
My chin shoots up. Tarek has taken away everyone I love. I have obeyed for too long. I will be silent no more. I hate you, I say, and I reach for my powers, vowing that the first second Tarek realizes that I am a Buddha will be his last. But I have exhausted my inner flame. I could parch his soul fire for fuel, but I would have to be close enough to lay my hands on his skin. Still, that would knock him out long enough for me to push his fire right back in, scorching him. I draw my dagger and stand.
Tarek raises a finger, stopping an archer from shooting me.
You will not kill me, love.
You are wrong. I am not Yasmin, I am Kalinda, and you will pay! I lift my knife as though I plan to cut away his smug smile, and then I move in with my free hand. But before I can touch Tarek, I see the blur of something arcing toward my head. And then nothing. 30. A foul stench wakes me. I lift my head to look around and then drop my cheek back to the sandy floor. The dungeons stink as dreadfully as I recall. I do not sit up when a guard brings a breakfast tray into my cell, nor do I stir when he leaves, locking the iron door behind him. I lie on my side, waiting for Tarek to come and force me to attend the tournament. He does not come, but the rats do. They scurry close, sniff my feet, and twitch their whiskers. I do not move for them, either. Eventually they grow bold and help themselves to my untouched food. I let them have it. Sand works its way under my clothes, a gritty itch that I lack the will to scratch. I stare at my hands, my worthless hands. All I can do in this poisonous prison is think. I have more than enough hours to reflect on what went wrong, but I do not need them. I know why I am here. The gods are punishing me. I strayed from their path, and they crushed my rebellious dreams.
You look droopy today, love.
Tarek drags a chair to the bars and sits, facing me. He is dressed for the tournament, in his finest jewel-adorned tunic and turban, the rubies cold crimson in the dim light. Either he knows that I am a Buta, and I have no power here, or he does not suspect what I am. I doubt that it would matter if he did know. He would probably find a way to restrict me by tying a collar of noxious herbs around my neck.
The guards said you won't eat. You really should. You will need your strength for your match tomorrow.
I stare at the floor, and he adds,
The third finalist is Natesha.
Your opponents have opted to fight with blades.
You may choose differently if you wish.
I am unsurprised to hear that Natesha was victorious, but his offering of a choice is absurd. Regardless of the weapon I choose, every one of the finalists is a better fighter. Any one of them could defeat me. I stew in my resentment. Let Tarek force me into the arena. Let him pit me against the three strongest challengers. Let them cut me down to the ground we stand on. I would rather go on to my next life than give him the satisfaction of watching me spill innocent blood. I won't fight. He settles back in his chair, relaxing into his mantle. I am not fooled by his ease. He is unpredictable when he has been drinking, and I can smell the apong on him from here.
You will fight, he says. Or I will burn down your temple.
Samia will be nothing but a smoke pillar in the distance. A dark laugh bursts out of me. You've taken away everything else. Why not my home?
I offer you the empire. You will be my wife, my queen. What else could you wish for?
A family.
A home.
My traitorous voice trembles on the last word I say.
Love? We speak of the same things.
Contempt drives me to my feet.
Your court is not a family. These women serve you only to survive. Your home is not my home. It is a prison of secrets and lies. And I will never love you. Not in this life or the next.
His eyes spark with temper.
If you're holding on to hope that Captain Naik is alive, you waste your prayers. He's dead.
Washed ashore down river. The birds and fish fed off his face. My chin quivers at his cruelty. It cannot be true. Devon was alive when I sent him off with Brack. They escaped the river's savage pull, and the aquifer healed him.
You lie.
Tarek tilts his head, a smile twisting his lips.
What need do I have to lie when the truth serves me better?
I refuse to believe him.
A darkness descends upon my mind, swallowing up my denial. Tears I vowed not to shed in front of Tarek slip through my grasp. I turn away. Leave me.
The tournament starts at high noon tomorrow. I expect you to be submissive when I return. The sooner you bend your will to mine, the sooner we will be happy.
I whirl to face him and glare.
The way you and Yasmin were happy?
Tarek stands fast, tipping over his chair.
You know nothing of Yasmin.
I step forward, braver with the bars between us.
I know she tried to run from you. I know she never loved you. She loved Kishan. Never speak his name!
Tarek pounds his fists against the cell bars. His face reddens, and tears gloss his eyes. Even with my own tears tracking down my cheeks from his cruel words, I find no satisfaction in causing him a mirrored pain. The color in Tarek's cheeks fades. He straightens and tugs down the cuffs of his jacket.
I will punish you for that.
Done with him, done with everything, I back into a corner and lower myself to a huddled crouch. Tarek goes, reserving his punishment for another time. For a time when he has not already won, and I am not already broken. My cell door creaks open, and a guard brings in my supper tray.
Iroji?
Go away. I stay hunched in the corner with my head down. I won't eat. I don't care what the Raja said.
The Raja didn't send me.
The guard's voice is familiar, with its gentle burr.
Natasha asked me to come. I brought a visitor.
A different voice adds,
We have come to see how you're faring.
I look up and see Yatin in the cell doorway, Brother Shan behind him. The big soldier scans me with soft eyes.
Natasha was concerned when you didn't attend the tournament today.
I wipe my soggy nose and rest my chin on my knees. Tell her I'm... alone. Afraid. Here. Yatin offers a sympathetic smile and sets down my supper tray. He leaves the cell, relocks the door, and then goes down the corridor out of sight. Brother Shan rights the chair that Tarek knocked over not long ago and sits.
I have taken care of your friend's burial. Jaya has her own grave.
Thinking of Jaya buried in a grave shreds the last of my resilience. I slope farther into the wall, my budding tears blooming to full-sized teardrops. Gratitude for Brother Shan's kindness mixes with my grief. Most wives are buried with their husbands, but Jaya would not wish to be laid to rest with Gautam. She would want her freedom.
I'm sorry for your losses,
his gentle voice continues. I want to cover my ears to avoid hearing what other loss I have accrued, but I am not fast enough.
Devin was a good man, one of the scarce few in Vani.
A whimper escapes my lips. Part of me still held on to the hope that Tarek was lying. But it seems he needed not lie in this, that the truth truly did serve him better. My heart retreats from the pain of losing Devin. I hug my knees closer to my chest and replay our final moments together. I did not know I was sending him to a watery grave. I did not know I would never see him again. Hot tears trickle down my face and drip off my chin into the sand, staining it dark.
I am sorry, Viraji,
Brother Shan offers quietly. I am too. He has no idea how much. I am sorry I did not save Jaya. I am sorry I did not make it down the river with Devon. I am sorry I will never see either of them again.
Do you think starving yourself will punish the Raja?
Says Brother Shan. No, I grit out. I hate that all my pain traces back to him. I hate him even more than I did last night. I hate him as much as I love Jaya and Devon, eternally and unconditionally. Not eating will make my point.
Which is?
Tarek does not command me.
I see. Brother Sean looks around the dungeons, as though there is something else to see besides filthy walls, sandy floors, and a broken girl.
How do you suppose you will win your match if you take poor care of yourself?
I have no intention of winning, I say with a scolding gaze. Then I refocus my abhorrence from Tarek onto Haston. The Buddha warlord left Devon to die. I blame him too.
What do you suppose the tournament is about?
Brother Sean asks in a reflective tone.
Winning the throne. Is it? I think it is about changing the way things have always been done.
I shake my head. We cannot change it. Brother Sean crosses his arms in front of him.
In the story of Enlil's 100th Rani, the decision of who lived and died was left to the fire gods, wives, and courtesans. The tournament took place because they disagreed on who would forfeit their place with Enlil.
Of course they disagreed. None of them wanted to die.
Perhaps. Or perhaps they had a chance to make peace, and they chose war.
I arch a brow. You think Anu would have spared their lives if they had refused to fight each other?
We will never know. None of them fought for anything other than their own lives. If they had banded together as sisters, I believe Anu would have taken mercy on them and they would have lived. He believed the virtue of sisterhood to be the solution. She organized the sisterhood, built temples, and instituted a whole line of women to teach the following generations. These ideals have been forgotten, but they are not lost.
He pushes his hands against his knees to help his old legs stand.
Just think how Enlil's courtesans would have changed the world had they chosen peace.
Brother Sean starts to leave. I rise and meet him at the bars. Do you really think the tournaments can be changed?
Anything can be changed by those who have the courage to blaze their own path.
But which path do the gods want us to follow? Ours or theirs? I grip the bars, impatient for an answer. Brother Sean's gaze bores into mine.
You assume your path, and the gods' path lead you in separate directions. But they are one and the same.
One path. I thought that my destiny was determined long ago, and that I could not alter it. But what if my life was never out of my control? What if it is not? Brother Sean smiles, understanding infinitely more than I do about the mysteries of the gods. He bows.
Virgi?
I stay pressed to the cell bars, listening to his retreating footfalls. Brother Sean implied that the gods want what I want. I wish to bring back Jaya and Devon. I wish to hold Jaya's hand and stroke Devon's cheek. But bringing back the dead is beyond even Anu's power. Misery weighs me down. If I cannot have Jaya and Devon, then what? I do not mull over my second choice for long. I want what I have wished for every day of my life, peace. But a simple, quiet life will be hard won. The Raja will not give me up. My challengers will not fall easily. I have as much chance of surviving the tournament as Jaya and Devon have of rising from the dead. Body heavy, I return to the corner and curl up in a ball. The rats revisit me, circling my meal tray. They chatter to each other, plotting how they will sneak up to my food without my noticing. Jaya was always strategizing ahead, anticipating others' decisions. If she were here, she would say that I am an inexperienced fighter, but I have a cause worth fighting for. She would say that my weapons may not have blades, but I can wield 5 virtues mightier than any sword. Devon would tell me that my fate may be to die in the arena, but I can fall with honor. I am not ready to die. If I were to allow Tarek to defeat me, Jaya and Devon would have perished for nothing. This is my fate. To fight,
to stand up to tradition, to finish what Yasmin could not. I crawl to my waiting supper tray, scattering the rats, and eat. Tarek comes for me the next morning. I lick the yogurt from my finger, and he looks in on me with surprise.
"You've come to your senses," he says.
The guard unlocks the cell door, and I exit the cell. Tarek kisses my cheek with more reserve than usual. He does not trust my obedience yet, but he will, because he wants to trust it.
"The time has come to prepare you for the arena. Will you behave yourself?"
"Yes, Your Majesty." Desire sparks in his eyes. He pulls me close and kisses me. My cheeks heat from the force of not fighting him off.
"That color becomes you, love," he says of my blush. "I hope to see it more often."
Tarek escorts me to the wives' wing and waits in my chamber while Asha readies me for the tournament. I have a new role to play today, my toughest performance yet. I am to act the part of a warrior. Behind the dressing screen, Asha wraps a band of ivory fabric around my breasts, sealing them to my ribs, and then holds up loose trousers for me to step into. They hang from my hips to my ankles, the cloth baggy between. The straps of sturdy, flat sandals wind up my shins, and leather cuffs strengthen my wrists. Asha smudges dramatic makeup onto my face. My lips are blood red, my eyes dark and wide, my cheeks rouged. She then braids strips of ivory into my hair, the same shade as my uniform. I will be dusty the second I step into the arena, but the white will look striking for the procession. I eye myself in the mirror glass for flaws, but Asha has done her job well. If I did not know myself, I would believe that I was the Raja's champion. I tuck that knowledge away to draw on later.
"May the gods be with you," Asha whispers.
I step out from behind the dressing screen for Tarek's final inspection. He nods approvingly with a hint of adoration, and then leads me out the main entry. The Imperial Court and soldiers prepare for the final journey to the amphitheater. Beyond the gates, the people chant for their champion. After today, I hope to be worthy of that title. Many eyes follow us as we cross the courtyard to the line of waiting elephants. Others must have heard of my failed attempt to flee the palace, but if they disagree with Tarek's decision to keep an unfaithful Viraji, no one dares speak loud enough for us to hear. Mathura stands off to the side, with the favored four, and I meet her gaze. She looks older, as though a lifetime has landed on her all at once. I expect her to be angry with me, but her loving eyes bear the same silent message as Devon's final words. "You can do anything you set your heart on." His echoed confidence shines from her. "Nothing," I say, "can replace her son. But maybe she understands that I tried to save him. Maybe she is as sick of death as I am. Maybe she knows that I fight for us all." Before I climb up the stairway to the howdah, Tarek pauses.
"I have a surprise for you."
Guards bring forward the old shepherd who helped me on my journey to Vani, along with his wife. The elderly couple bows.
"Viraji,"
they say, smiling. I embrace both of them. I smell of the alpanas, of budding spring grass and chilly starry nights. But why did Tarek bring them here? Worry for their safety hides behind my glassy smile.
"I'm glad you came."
"The moment we met you, we knew you were Arani,"
the old man says, with his strange rolling R's.
"We wish you the blessing of the gods."
I thank them repeatedly. I need their prayers more than they could possibly know. Tarek speaks to a guard.
"Find them seats in the amphitheater, and see that they are comfortable."
The older couple bows in appreciation and shambles away, arm in arm. Tarek helps me climb into the howdah.
"How did you find them?" I ask.
"They asked for you at the gates. I thought you would be pleased to see them."
Tarek does nothing out of kindness.
He means to prove that I can have a family, home, and love with him. I do not wish to owe him even the smallest sliver of gratitude, but I must convince him that I am the compliant young woman he wishes me to be. I kiss him on the cheek and whisper my thanks. He beams and opens a flask of spirits. Our elephants plod through the overcrowded roads, and I encourage Tarek to take the bottle often. I want Tarek to drink today. I need him good and tipsy if I am to succeed. 31. Dust rains down from the upper levels of the amphitheater. The cheers and stomps of the audience drown out the violent pounding of my heart. An armorer straps a heavy shield to my arm. The cool metal soaks into my skin, and I shiver in the sweltering midday heat. Light from outside blazes into the cave-like exit to the arena, a golden path that leads to my destiny or my doom. Cries from the spectators escalate in a crescendo of hysteria, a fervor for blood. They care not whose blood, so long as crimson coats the arena floor by day's end. An iron helmet is dropped onto my head, pushing me down with the might of a thousand regrets. I should not be here. It should not have come to this. Jaya should be safe and Samia, Devon should be serving the Empire. But they are gone, and I am here. I will do this for them. I will do this for everyone who will suffer if I fail. Through the yawning gate, I glimpse the final blow of the opening act. Since Lakia sabotaged her challengers before they could enter the arena, the Raja arranged for her to demonstrate her greatness with a battle against a thieving servant. Lakia ends her downed opponent with a blade through the chest. Blood pours from the defeated thief as though her heart is a fallen bucket. Cheers erupt, and the Raja's voice rings out, "See my kindred in all her glory!" Lakia leaves the arena through an opposite doorway, her arms raised in victory. I do not applaud. Her thirst for blood is disgraceful. The defeated thief is wheeled out, and the armorer double-checks the security of my shield and helmet. Both are on tight. The quartet of gongs peals, and the mob hushes to a whisper. Tarek speaks from his perch in the imperial box.
"Welcome to the championship match!"
Spectators holler their joy.
"We have had more challengers in this tournament than ever in the history of our great empire. Each of them fought valiantly for my final Rani's crown, but only three have earned the right to stand in this arena today. Anjali, Farisha, and Natesha have proven to be worthy contenders for my Viraji."
Across the way, my opponents enter through a door to the calls of the crowd.
"They will now battle the god's champion of choice, a young woman who is the living reincarnation of Enlil's 100th Rani, the indomitable Kalinda!"
My name reverberates through the arena, each syllable ricocheting off the walls and returning to me with the might of a fallen axe. I inhale slowly, my pulse quickening. "Remember the gods. Remember your path." The bladesmith hands me a conda and urges me out the door. I wage war against my resistant knees, my whole body rusty from nerve-crackling trepidation. But with one step, just a single step, I know that I can build momentum. So I draw a steadying breath, shriveling my monstrous fear to a less sizable opponent, and pass through the gaping, sun-drenched gate. The bright light blinds me. Applause deafens me. My eyes refocus, and I spot the outline of my challengers approaching the center of the arena. A chalk circle marks our starting position. The battle ring. The armorer shuts the gate behind me and lowers the lever, locking me inside. A sob tangles in my throat, but screaming is useless. Anjali is the first in the battle ring. Farisha stalks in after her, followed by Natesha. The women are dressed like me, only in black. Their bodies are toned and powerful, their faces are sculpted with aggression. As I face off with these established warriors, every lurid tournament battle I have watched floods back to me. I know what to expect, yet I jolt when the gongs clang. Anjali pivots and engages Farisha. I thought that they would all turn on me, but Anjali successfully draws Farisha away with her, swords clanging. This leaves me Natesha.
I have waited a long time for this, Natesha says, slashing forward.
I parry her thrust.
We don't have to fight, I say. I lift my shield and her sword connects. The vibration jogs up my arm.
I back out of the chalk ring, drawing her farther away from Anjali and Farisha. I raise my voice above the cheering of the spectators.
I don't want to fight you. Only one of us can win, and it will be me.
There is another way.
Concede and I will see that you have your freedom.
She scoffs and swings. I block and lean in. Our blades bang together.
Trust me, I can save you.
I can save myself.
Natesha pushes off my blade and rounds at me fast. The tip of her sword catches my forearm. My skin rips open and blood streams down to my cuffed wrist. I retreat, willing away the screeching pain. I had anticipated that Natesha would be the hardest to convince. She hungers for the safety and security of my throne. Across the way, Anjali and Farisha shuffle to and from each other. Farisha tries to get past Anjali, but Anjali blocks her. She is keeping Farisha away from me. Anjali is on my side, but I cannot do this without Natesha.
Natesha treads closer. Let's end this, Kalinda.
She knows that she can best me in skill and strength. I will parch her if I must, but I do not want to compel her into peace. I pray that she is changed, that she will see that we can finish this without violence. I toss aside my sword. I won't fight. Her face contorts into fury.
She hits me in the face with the side of her shield. Pick up your sword!
I take off my shield and my helmet, casting them aside.
Defend yourself! She kicks me in the stomach. I fall, cradling my aching middle.
From my peripheral view, I see that Tarek has left his throne to stand at the edge of the balcony. The crowd grows uneasy, cheers switching to murmured agitation.
Natesha kicks me in the back, pushing me toward my fallen sword. Pick it up!
No. I look up at her, my chest heaving. You are the only sister I have left. Her eyes register an emotion between hatred and love. Familiarity. Here, where every woman fends for herself, that camaraderie is precious. I kneel before her, stripped of my armor and weapon. It's me Tarek wants.
Concede and I will protect you. I swear on the gods you will go free.
Anjali screams.
I look past Natesha to see Farisha wrench her sword from Anjali's upper thigh.
Farisha lifts her kanda in a killing stance.
I rise and charge her before she finishes Anjali off. Stop this! We don't have to fight! We can band together and save all our lives!
Farisha turns her attack on me and hacks at my neck. I stumble backward to avoid her blade and trip over my discarded helmet. I land hard on my backside, my sword far from my grasp. Farisha laughs.
You're a worse fighter than I was told.
I speak past the panic gripping my voice. Lay down your weapon, and I vow I will protect you with my life. Farisha lifts her kanda over her head.
What life?
Her blade drops at the same time that she hurtles forward from the impetus of a sword driving through her chest. I peer past her, expecting to see Anjali, but it is Natesha who wrenches her kanda from Farisha's back. Farisha drops to the arena floor in a cloud of dust. A frantic onrush of applause erupts at the first defeat of a finalist. Natesha levels her sword at me. I go perfectly still and stare down her bloody blade.
You swear I will have my freedom? She asks.
On Ki and every sister warrior who has ever lived, I swear it. Natesha's sword remains trained on me. my breath's rasp stinging my lungs. She lunges and stabs her blade into the ground, missing my knee by a finger's length, and raises her arms to the spectator.